Okay, I'm gonna pull this rookie's chain. Cole, you're wandering all over the track.
Yeah, well, the son of a bitch just slammed into me.
No, he didn't slam into you. He didn't bump you. He didn't nudge you. He rubbed you. And rubbing, son, is racing.
Welcome back, guys, to another episode of the You Ain't Lying podcast presented by the MLS Aces. I am, of course, Travis Grimes, and with me, Nathan Hale and Stephen Buckridge. Fellas, how we doing tonight?
Stephen, I'll ask you first. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great. We just had a storm come through here in Loveland. It's kind of the storm that's going to go through Orlando tomorrow night.
Good call. Good call. I'm over here in the Kenwood Silverton area, and we had that same storm. You're not too far from me, and you know, quick burst of wind, some rain. Hopefully that's it. Knock on wood. Even though it's my last name, I'm not a big fan of hail. I got plenty of puns if we want to go down that road. But I'm doing good, guys. So, Travis, we'll turn it back to you, man. How you doing?
Good. I don't have a pun, but I'm in White Oak, and we had a storm come through as well. So still dealing with the pool issue, which is going to drive me insane. But anyway, on to brighter things. I guess first we'll start off with the last match we saw against the New York Red Bulls. FC Cincinnati takes a 2-0 victory. Did it ever really look in doubt? I mean, after the Kubo goal, yeah, Red Bulls had most possession. They really didn't threaten until after the second goal and about the last 10 minutes of the match. So, Nathan, I'll start with you. What was your biggest takeaway from that match?
The slow playing of not getting Florian Vallot in the expansion draft just so he could get an own goal and seal the victory for us. Man, Koch continues to deliver. Just skipping over Vallot and letting him do that years later, man. Masterclass. We'll use that word. But
masterclass. Yes.
Masterclass. But with the game itself, yeah, I mean, I'll gladly take the W. We were the better managed, better prepared team. That's obvious. New York's kind of finishing in the final third and really getting there was their Achilles heel. That's why it was a 2-0 victory. You know, if you looked at the statistics, New York had 51 crosses. That's crazy. That's crazy. I don't know that I've ever seen a game, any league, where there was 51 crosses by the opposition and they lost. So that's crazy, but it goes to show what Waston can do. You know, what Pedersen can do, Duplan, Madunian, and even, you know, just some of those big bodies in the box. Size wise, we're one of the bigger defensive teams in the league. Speed wise and athletic ability wise, kind of moving around, if you know your agility, that kind of hurts us. But in a game like this where we're packing it in the back, it 100% played to our favor. So after Kubo's strike, which was on a New York mistake, a poor clearance by their center back, and Kubo was clinical, we had 4 shots on goal to get really, you know, one of those in and then get the fluke goal, which we absolutely deserve. If you look at our history and just some of the nonsense that's happened, not necessarily just FC Cincinnati, but Cincinnati in general, I'll gladly accept that fluke goal. Madunian put a great ball into the box. We talked about it. There's really no way that Vallot could have cleared that, especially not at his size. And he put their keeper in a position that you're never going to be that fast. So I'll gladly take the 2-0 victory. Allows us to build some confidence and going on a high into the knockout stages, obviously versus Portland tomorrow night. So excited about that. Little timid. We'll get into that obviously later. But what about you guys? What about you, Steven? What were your thoughts on the 2-0 victory?
Yeah, I love how you put Vallot in kind of the Kai Kamara, you know, legacy status for FC Cincinnati.
Club legend.
It's great, yeah. You know, last week we talked about this, and the Red Bulls are a young team. And I don't remember which one of you guys said it directly, but by allowing them to create the mistakes was our opportunity to win that game. And Nate, just as you just mentioned, that's exactly what happened. You know, the Kubo's goal was the result of, you know, Andrew Gutman. How well is he playing in that left wing back position? But he just was aggressive going after the ball, won the ball on the sideline, was able to get a pretty fast paced, you know, a ball in, and it was not accurate. But you know what happens when you put the ball in the box? Mistakes happen. And that's exactly what Kubo was able to clean up. And then, yeah, that second goal, we appreciate Velo scoring it for us. But it, again, that was caused by Joe Gel and his hustle down the right wing backside and causing that corner kick. And that's all you need. Four shots, two on target, two goals. You know, one own goal, but that's okay. Red Bulls, you know, they had the possession. They had the 19 shots total, but only four on target. And Nate, you mentioned it. They had, you know, 51 crosses, but only, you know, 12% of those were accurate. So I think the Red Bulls played right into what Coach Staam wanted them to do. They made the mistakes and they gave the opportunities to the orange and blue to pounce on.
Yeah. And, you know, like I talked with Chad Brendel and I talked with Mo Egger about it, and they wanted me to preview the Red Bulls match. And it's what I said, you know, when they played Atlanta, when we frustrated Atlanta, veteran teams foul. They foul a lot and they'll get a ton of yellow cards. When young teams get frustrated, like we did with the Red Bulls, young teams just make mistakes. They won't foul a lot. They'll just start making mistakes, easy mental mistakes. And that's exactly what the Red Bulls did. It led to Kubo's goal. It led to some of their crosses being errant. I know one player told me that at halftime, Red Bulls players were at each other's throat. You know, they were arguing. They were frustrated. They were cussing each other out. And it happened in the second half, too. There was no real talking when it came to the Red Bulls' communication on the pitch. It was more of them yelling at each other and trying to figure out how the hell to break down FC Cincinnati's defense, which, again, tactical masterclass.
Bingo.
Joe Gel again on the right wing as a right wing back. Just maybe he didn't play as well as he did against Atlanta going forward. But defensively, he still did really, really well, which, again, crazy for a guy that spends most of his time on the offensive end as a winger, a true winger. To see him do that as a defensive player was really, really impressive. Gutman, I think, has taken over that left back spot. I don't think he's given that up to Garza anytime soon. Unfortunately, I think Garza's time here is probably close to being at an end. You would like to see Vandeverf healthy. Obviously, we're not going to, but I still think the back five, I think it's what we're going to see against Portland is the back five. And I guess tactically, Nate, you know, did you see any change at all between Atlanta and Red Bulls? I know it may have been minuscule, but did you see anything different at all?
The biggest thing I'll say, man, it's not really a tactical change. It's a confidence change. Yeah. And that's something you can't really put anything on other than just like you kind of have a feel for it. And Kubo, you know, they knew going in, like, they have to be clinical. We have to take our chances. We're going to bunker down. And I'll say this. If you would have told me going in, well, even after the Columbus game, that we were going to have back-to-back clean sheets, like we talk about joking around, like betting our paycheck. Yeah, I would have bet a paycheck. Like, that's not going to happen. And it absolutely did. That's a credit to the back five. It's a credit to Gutman, to Gel, to TT. TT did great the last 15 minutes. His positioning was very good. And a lot of times keepers par the ball. When I say that, like they push the ball back into play, TT did a really good job of pushing it to the side, pushing it away from goal, which is key to not allow that rebound shot or that second chance goal. So, you know, looking at the back five tactically, what we've got, what we're going to kind of go into, I'm with you. I'd love to see Vandeverf in there. The pawn is filled in nicely. Pedersen has looked very good now that the team has confidence. And Kendall was actually on extra time this past week. You know, they interviewed him after the win and kind of just Kendall's showing confidence, right? Kendall's showing the leadership. He says the right things. He gives credit to his teammates, which again goes a long way for confidence. And Frankie even hit him after the game. You know, everybody's doubted us. Everybody hates us. He said, I think it was exact terminology, which I don't know if the whole league, like from an opponent standpoint, hates us, but they absolutely hate our fan base because we're loud. And if we consistently get good, they're going to really hate us. But I mean, it's true. But with everything looking at it, I expect us to go into Portland with the same mindset. The pieces, though, I think could be a little bit different. You know, getting De Jong back, getting Cruz back healthy. You know, we'll hit on this here in a little bit with Locati and what that looks like and some of those things. So I think we still kind of go with that, you know, three center back, two wing back kind of pairing. We might mix up the midfield And looking at Portland, again, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but looking at Portland, there's some opportunity there from an offensive standpoint where we can kind of take advantage. But, Steven, what do you think going in? You know, do we think we run that same kind of five at the back with the wing-back pairing? Or do you think we change tactics? You know, where do you see us moving into that next game?
Now, I agree. I absolutely look at us having the five at the back, the three center backs, the two wing backs. You know, Portland is very similar to a Columbus Crew from just such a talented midfield, and we'll break that down here in a few minutes. But that really is just the confidence that Stam has brought to the players. And the club just posted this a little while ago. And it was just, you know, it's just great to see someone like Caleb Stanko, who's gotten the ability or the chance to come in and make a difference. And, you know, it's, you know, his exact words were that Stam brings a very intense tactical discipline approach to the game, and that he appreciates it because it, you know, it's not always been that same way with the past coaches, and that style fits into his play. And so that confidence we're seeing and hearing from the players, I don't see Stam moving away from that. He can see that it's working for this team, for where their psyche has been, where they need to go, and then to be able to come up against a talented midfield like Portland, you know, that's going to be a key. You know, one thing I would note just from the Red Bull game is you know, two things that stood out to me, though. Even though we gave away possession, we gave away the shots, we were, you know, bunkered down, as people would like to say, and took chances or took our, you know, be able to convert our couple opportunities. Where we won the game, we had 59 duels won to their 45. We had 10 tackles won to their 4. And I think this style of play, this tactical style of play, has really allowed us to be cohesive and come out stronger as a unit and take some of those intangibles and use them to our good.
Yeah, there's nothing that can build a defense's confidence faster than clean sheets. And, you know, it's especially when it's Stam. It's Stam's team. Stam's a defender, a legendary defender. Now you have your defense giving up zero goals, clean sheets. I mean, that there can't be any more confidence for that back five. And then you have Jao playing the way he is, Gubin playing the way he is. They looked – the one thing I'll add is they looked more connected to the midfield – against the Red Bulls than they did against Atlanta. Atlanta was kind of like, okay, if we're going to attack, we need Joe to kind of dribble around a couple of people up the right wing, and now we're in attack. Whereas the Red Bulls, it was more, okay, let's feed the ball to Madunian and let's get him up to Amaya, and then let's play through Kubo or Regaton and then get the wing backs up. So it was nice to see that little added dimension to the 5-3-2. I do find it interesting. I know you kind of alluded to it. With De Jong coming back, how does that look? We've already seen so far in, you know, one match against the Crew, and we kind of all knew this, Madunian and De Jong cannot coexist in a midfield of only three together. So, do you continue to play the 5-3-2 and then need to put De Jong up as a false nine with Kubo? Do you play a 4-3-3 and kind of take Madunian out of the midfield and put him on the bench, and then put De Jong with maybe a Cruz and a Amaya, because now Alan Cruz is healthy. Now, I've heard that Jaap Stam thinks that Amaya and Cruz are essentially the same type of player, and he prefers Frankie Amaya. So where does that leave Alan Cruz on the roster? It'll be really interesting to see now that Cruz is 100% healthy, how well Stanko has played. Do they go more offensive? Do they go for it against Portland because they are so confident in the back five? And maybe Madunian in front of them, or do they still consider themselves without Lacadia permanently back? Hey, we need to still play the way we're playing. Let's play defense most of the time. Let's hit them on the counter. Let's, you know, maybe send a ball deep to Vasquez when he comes in late in the match and try to steal a goal. Because the one thing about Portland is they're kind of like Atlanta was without Joseph Martinez. They're not extremely creative, but they're extremely effective at the chances that they get. They don't get a ton of chances like LAFC does, where it just seems like LAFC has like 40 shots on target every match. But they'll score two or three goals every match if you're not careful. They're not going to do anything flashy. It's very fundamentally sound. It's not the most beautiful soccer you'll ever see, but it's very effective. They've scored two goals in every match so far. They haven't lost. They're 2-0-1. The one tie was against LAFC, who we saw is still really, really good without Carlos Vela. So it'll be interesting to see with De Jong back, with Cruz back, do they stick to their guns, maybe bring those guys off the bench, or do they try to just go for it now? We're in the knockout stages. Do they just try to go for it?
Well, here's what I'll say. So I actually dissected each one of Portland's games in terms of how they scored and how their opposition scored. And kind of there was absolutely some trends there, which you'd expect, right? Teams have playing styles. To your point, Travis, they don't have the absolute skill set that LAFC does, but they have moments of individual brilliance. And there's really two players, Diego Valeri and Seba Blanco, or Sebastian Blanco, who basically, Blanco's got three assists in this tournament. Valeri set up a ball to Blanco, who passed it back into Obovese, who scored. Obovese has three goals, in each game so far for Portland. So if you dive into the team a little bit, Obovese's right place, right time. Poor marking in some cases. Poor clearances from back lines, from center backs, out of position. Things that over the past two games for us have been strengths. So if we can honestly, and without totally diving in it too much, just let you guys go, if we can honestly kind of shut down that creativity, and a lot of it's second chance balls or balls that, you know, are Valeri in the Blanco, who's in space, who then creates something. But if we can stay positioned, and I honestly believe that we'll go back five, I think that works. I'm with you that I would love to open up some things and kind of get a little bit more creative. But the way Portland plays, if you can shut down Valeri and limit Blanco, you've got a really good shot. Obobese's not really a creator. Their new striker, their new DP, Nezgoda, I believe is his name. He's Polish. He scored last game, but it was a great ball from Blanco into space. That was like, it reminded me of our goal, or Zardes' goal versus us. It was basically Nezgoda versus the keeper. And the striker, the DP striker, is going to win that more often than not. But yeah, that was set up by Blanco in poor positioning from a back line. So I absolutely want us to open it up. I absolutely want to get De Jong in. Like we've talked De Jong time in and time out, where we love that dude. And he's never really done anything, but we love that dude. We love what he can bring. But with the way Portland can create with just two players, honestly, do we just bunker down and do the same tactics and hope that, hey, on the counter where Portland is susceptible, that's where a lot of the goals, like if you look at Bradley Phillips' goal versus them last game, it was similar to Kubo's. No, BWP stroke it a little bit better. There's a rocket into the goal, but it was the left side of the goal, poor positioning, similar to Kubo versus New York, where the center back was not in the right spot, gave him the opportunity to take a clean shot on goal, and he buried it, just like Kubo buried it. That is an opportunity for Portland. They're susceptible on the break. They're a little overconfident. So I'll turn it over to you, Travis. We'll switch gears a little bit, but what do you think we're going to do? Do you think it's still the five at the back? Do you think we're going to go more 4-3-3? Do you think Madunian maybe sits for the first time, which is crazy to think with the way we've played the last two games, but that's a very real possibility with Cruz back. Do we go Cruz and Amaya and De Jong at the 10? Like, what do you think we're going to do?
Steven, I'll let you take that.
Okay, sure. Well, I got a couple thoughts there, and we'll let Travis kind of clean up on it, but yeah, to your point that you're making, Nate, is with respect to Portland and taking their chances or creating chances, a lot of it is second chances. A lot of it is by what's happening in the game. In those first three games in their group play, they only had 32 shots total in three games, but 16 of them were on goal. So they have a high shooting accuracy. But the other thing that comes out as you look at how they play the game is that of the 32 shots on that they took, 27 of them are inside the 18-yard box. So they're not looking to shoot outside the 18-yard box. They only had one shot on goal that was outside the 18-yard box and zero goals. So all their six goals are with their creativity or their combinations or things happening within the box. And so it just kind of, to me, hammers home the need to continue with that five across the back and really have an impenetrable wall that's just out the 18-yard box. Put it at the 20-yard box. That they're not just going to – we're not going to allow the Portland attack. And they've got a fantastic, you know, midfield. They've got the Argentinian pair in both Valeri and Blanco. And then you get the Chara brothers. So they're going to have a lot of possession. They're going to have a lot of, you know, creativity in that middle third of the field. But if we can put that impenetrable wall of the five in the back just around the 20-yard mark, you know, and prevent them from what they want to do. They don't want to take shots from outside the box. They don't want to take chances from outside the box. And that's where I think we can frustrate them.
Yeah, and I know Nate wanted to ask me about this, so I'll go ahead and dive into it a little bit. Eventually, the back five is going to be scored on, right? There are some signs that the Red Bulls started to break down the line between DePlon and Waston just for a moment there with little quick little passes in and out. And I think with the Chara brothers, Blanco, Valeri, they're able to do those things. Like you said, Steven, they want to shoot inside the 18. So they're going to get as close as possible. And they're pretty creative individually. They're not, like I talked about earlier, they're not exactly like LAFC where you're just going to see through balls all over the place and it's all beautiful team soccer. It's more individual stuff. But still, that back five is eventually going to give up a goal. So eventually, Stom's going to have to put an offensive group, at least four or five offensive players on the pitch. So if I were in Jaap Stam's shoes, I'd stay with the back five that currently has been the last two matches. I mean, they have a ton of chemistry together. They've got two clean sheets. They've all played really well. You don't change that. The change for me would be put De Jong in the midfield and put Cruz and Amaya behind him as dueling eights, double pivots, whatever you want to call them. They're both essentially box-to-box midfielders. Cruz is a little bit better in attack than Amaya is. He showed that over the last season and a half. And I don't think they're losing anything defensively. I mean, Stanko obviously is a better defender than Cruz and Amaya. But Cruz is also a better defender than Medunian is. So do you make up that difference when Cruz is better than Medunian defensively? I don't know. But it does help you going forward. It also gives you a better link to the front two when you have De Jong in the midfield for the back five to connect to. We saw early in the crew match. I mean, if Regatin was Lacadia, they're up 2-0 in the first 20 minutes against the crew because of Sim De Jong's ball from the midfield both times. Regatin's he's shown to be not a great finisher, obviously, so far. So, you know, if that's Lacadia, De Jong has two assists. FC Cincinnati is up 2-0 in the first 20 minutes, but it wasn't. So I think and we saw it a little bit against the Red Bulls when he came in late with Vasquez. You saw what he's capable of. He was frustrated with Vasquez. I know Vasquez has been struggling in training. He struggled against the Red Bulls. He struggled against Atlanta. He just looks like he's pressing and trying too hard. But De Jong was very, very frustrated with Vasquez on a couple of the runs he made, a couple of the runs he didn't make. But the ball was there. I mean, it was perfectly weighted. It was in the right spot. Vasquez just failed to do the correct thing as a striker. So that's what I would want to see. And then leave Kubo Regatin up top. They've done perfectly fine, especially Regatin pressing center backs when the ball's in the air. Who would have thought a guy who might be 5'6", winning balls against center backs or drawing fouls against center backs when the ball's in the air? It's nuts to me. Like, I don't know. I didn't expect that out of him. But, yeah, I would like to see De Jong in the midfield starting out to have that link to Kubo and Regatin. I mean, I think that really works out. And the counterattack is even better that way.
Travis, is that a 5? Is that more than a 5-3-2? More like a 5-2-1-2? Is that how you see that?
Yeah, because I want De Jong closely connected to Kubo and Regatin, but also not too – it's weird. It would be like a compact 5-2-1-2 where De Jong's not too far from the back five in case Cruz and Amaya aren't that link from the back five to De Jong, but then also not far enough away from Kubo and Regatin where he really can't play those through balls and balls over the top to make a difference. Because I think they're going to be back in their half of the pitch anyway. So it may work out to be a 5-2-1-2. I wouldn't mind seeing that. I don't know if Cruz and Amaya are going to be necessarily close enough to the back five to make it work. I think it's got to be something that Stam sits down with both of them and says, hey, listen, I know you both like to get forward, but this is not what we're doing this match. You guys are both built to be eights. You're both built to be box-to-box midfielders, so play that role. I think people have gotten on me about this too because I've been on this kick for like 2 weeks. You guys know this. And they get on me about the double pivot or the double lock or however you want to call it. They're two eights. They're two box-to-box midfielders. they know how to play the position. It's not like they forgot how to play in the last year. Like, we signed Alan Cruz. He was called Tico Conte. Like, he was a box-to-box destroyer when we signed him. He just so happened to be a good goal scorer, too. But if you put Amaya and Cruz in front of that back five, how much are they going to pester the Portland midfield? The Portland midfield needs to have pressure on them. Those two guys, as quick and pacey as they are, and as good as they are at being box-to-box midfielders, that's the pressure you need, and that they could drive Portland's midfielders nuts.
Well, here's – we agree a lot on this podcast. Like, that's something I've kind of come to realize over time. We think a lot alike. But here's the argument I'm going to make on that is I absolutely agree, Travis. Like, I think in a perfect world that Amaya and Cruz are your perfect pairing at the back, two kind of eights. But I think that takes time. That takes time to build that relationship. When one goes forward, does the other have the discipline to stay back? And I think Frankie does, but I don't know that Cruz does. But you know who absolutely does is Madunyanin. Madunyanin has showed that he will stay back. And he learned a very valuable lesson versus Columbus when he went forward and he's chasing Nagby, and Nagby basically taught him a lesson because that's not Madunyanin's game. But of the three names that I just mentioned, who is the best deep-lying passer? Madunyanin, without doubt. Yeah. Who has the most experience in this league? Madunyanin, without doubt. And it's not just this league, just generally speaking. So if it's worked and you've got Cruz coming back in to the fold, and then even De Jong up front. I love having De Jong up front, but you can't go like a 5-1-1-1-2. That's not going to work. So if you look at like a tactical aspect or how do you build a lineup, in a perfect world, I want Amaya and Cruz in there. You can't pull Frankie. Stam clearly likes Frankie for damn good reason. Credit to Frankie. But I think, honestly, if anything, Stanko's the odd man out, which kind of stinks. And but stinks because
it stinks.
It stinks. Exactly. It stinks. But it leaves you open defensively too, because Stanko is a rock at the back when he's playing in that fold, in that mentality. You want to get De Jong's creativity on the pitch, especially in a game where there might be more than just a 1-0 or a 2-0 game. So very tough questions to ask of Stam and how he builds this lineup if he can't kind of continues the five at the back mold, because you've got a lot of talent, a lot of players that do some of it similarly, some of it very differently. Madunyanin is a very different player than Amaya and Cruz. De Jong's a very different player than all three. So building that midfield, you've got options, but you've really, this is going to really test Stam's ability to build a team and dive through footage and understand, you know, how do I approach this and what gives us the best chance to either long play it and then I make a late sub or long play it and win. And I think I'm with you guys. I think we go with the five at the back. I think that's don't fix if it's not broke. But at the same time, I think we kind of keep the same lineup and your first two subs, if something goes awry, are either Cruz then De Jong or De Jong then Cruz. So I think Madunyanin, I don't know how you change it at this point. If it's not broken, don't fix it. So, yeah. Steven, thoughts?
Yeah, I actually align with what you just said, Nate, and here's why. Is I agree with the perspective that in the end, you know, say we're middle of August or back into the regular season play, we want to see Cruz and De Jong and Locadia and all of our resources and top dogs out there. But let's not, you know, fix what's not broken. First. Second is Cruz and De Jong are not match fit. They just aren't. I mean, they played one game in the last 4 months. And I don't know how much Stam's willing to put out both of them in a pivotal, you know, knockout game like this, where he knows both players are not match fit. The other thing I would bring into this is one of the things that we need to do cleverly, and I think Frankie does it extremely well. Frankie has been such a great, you know, kind of a pest and a gnat and just hanging around people's ankles and kind of, you know, kicking at them at times. That's exactly what we need to be doing to Valeria and Blanco and these guys. We have really five midfielders we're talking about, Harris and Stanko and Frankie and Cruz and De Jong. Is that I expect each one of them to have a yellow card by the end of this game.
Yep.
Is we have just got to be in these guys' knickers and making it difficult for them to do what they want to do. And so I would not be surprised to see Stam roll out the same 5-3-2 lineup that he has done the last two games, or you know, the last game being with DePauw in there because Vandeweghe is out. But I would agree. I think maybe it's at halftime or early second half. You bring in a Cruz or a De Jong and look what you can do from that perspective. But we've got five midfielders, and those five midfielders need to play. Each one of them is going to have a role to play, whether it's a well-timed foul or just, you know, being put into the right spot at the right time that Stam brings them in off the bench.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the correct time to foul. It was something that I criticized this team for last year. It sounds weird to say, for those that aren't like huge soccer fans or they're new to it, a well-timed foul can save you a goal. You know, Chelsea's really good at it. Their midfield's really good at it. Conte, you know, all those midfielders for Chelsea are really, really good at it. In the last two matches, we've seen it with FC Cincinnati. Waston did it. Stanko has done it a lot. Amaya has always been pretty decent at it, taking a well-timed foul. It stops a counterattack. You know, when midfielders look back and they see that their defense, their back five, back four is not set, it's a good time to take that foul, and they've done that really, really well. Yeah, Kovacic, Conte, all those guys, Jorginho. Chelsea is known for the well-timed fouls by their holding midfielders, and that's what I've seen out of FC Cincinnati. And I know it stopped at least one break. I think Waston did it against Atlanta. I may be wrong, but I think Waston and DePlon were the only two that were setting back. Pedersen got caught up on a stepping on a challenge on the opposite side of the pitch. Gutman was up. Jao was up. So I think it was Waston and DePlon were the only two back, and Atlanta was breaking. And he took a really good, just a solid, well-timed foul. I know it's something – it's weird for me to go on a tangent on it, but it saved a goal, which could have turned the tide of the game. So, yeah, again, it's always been like I'm a striker at heart. I want to see attacking soccer. So, yeah, it does suck a little bit that I have to watch defensive soccer all the time. And, yeah, maybe that's why I want to see Cruz and Amaya in the midfield with De Jong starting. And Steven's right. I mean, they're not probably match fit. But the only real way to get match fit is to get significant minutes. Now, if that means they bring them in at halftime, if they bring them in the 60th minute, you know, they can get match fit that way. My fear is – and me and my wife were talking about it last night, actually. My fear is they defend for so long, and if Portland breaks through early, now they have to break out of that shell. Now they have to go attack. Well, you're not going to sub in the 15th minute. Do you really have the players to consistently attack on the pitch? And then what if Portland grabs a second? Okay, well, now then you got to make subs at halftime and hope that in 45 minutes you can make up a two-goal, you know, deficit. So it worries me. You know, Medina has been solid. I don't think he's been great by any means. I don't think he has anything defensively. Yeah, he's a good deep-lying playmaker. He's not done it a ton so far. I mean, really, if you look at the first Kubo goal, it was Pedersen who was calm on the ball, got the ball out to Gutman. Gutman who played a ball into the box that was dangerous. They fuddled it around, and then Kubo scores. Medina has not really been involved a whole lot. He's done some switching of play. He's kind of been pointing around to people to go to certain spots, which is needed. I mean, your midfield needs a guy like that who's experienced and knows where people need to be. But I still think the best lineup, and maybe even the best lineup tomorrow, is still got Cruz and Amaya in the midfield.
I'll agree. In a perfect world, right? In a perfect world where maybe after this tournament, we'll hit on the schedule after the tournament and what's been proposed, thanks to the Athletic and kind of what they uncovered. But looking at this, I think ultimately this is going to sound really, really cheesy, and we've talked about master classes and coaching over the past couple podcasts, but I really think it's a Stam versus Savarese approach. I think that's ultimately what this game comes down to. And Stam having, like, you've got 1A, 1B, right? 1A, 5 at the back. Well, what happens, to your point, Travis, if Portland gets up early 1-0 in the 15th minute, which is absolutely a possibility, like a very good possibility, kind of like versus Columbus. What do? Do you switch tactics? Do you open the floodgates, right? We've seen the floodgates open. That's not fun for anybody, especially not now that we've got a little bit of notoriety and it's versus Portland. It's a knockout stage game and the eyes are on us. If something were to happen and we lose, you know, a lot to be proud of, but I think this is an opportunity, and I think the team sees it that way, to really make a statement, right? You can beat Portland again. We've beat them once. Granted, it was our first game at Nippert in MLS, first home game, but Frankie Amaya, to your point, talking about tactical fouls, Frankie Amaya has more fouls than anybody in this tournament. like that's a fact. Because he's
Frankie.
Go Frankie, because he understands when, how, and his fouls are, they're the chippy. They're the annoying fouls that piss off midfielders. They're not, he's not going to go blow you up, but he's going to chip you in the foot, chip you in the shin, you know, get a knee in the back of your thigh, and the stuff that pisses you off as a player. And that's what Frankie does really well. So I think Stam goes into this with kind of a 1A, 1B approach, and that's the way I would approach it. Like 1A, let's defend five to back. And then if we get to halftime, it's still 0-0, maybe make a tactical change, or maybe surprise Portland going into the second half. Or do you surprise them just coming out of the gates and you kind of hope that, hey, they weren't at all prepared for this, and you kind of out-coach Savarese in that aspect. Now, Savarese knows this league. He knows this game. But, I mean, be honest, Alan Koch out-coached him. So I have faith in Stam to do the same. But that's my approach. I think you have a 1A, 1B approach. Like, you go in, like, if there's an early goal against us or early goal for us, you have a plan. And then the opposite. Like, you know, if it's halftime and it's still 0-0 or 1-1, heaven forbid, what do you do from there? So that's kind of my thoughts on how you approach it from a managerial standpoint.
Well said. Well said. It's do you take your chance early, or do you hang in there and try to get him in the second half and either nick a goal or get him to PKs and see what happens? I mean, look what Vancouver did last night with their homegrown goalkeeper. I mean, that was amazing. Yeah, they were outshot, outperformed, out everything, but their homegrown goalkeeper came up with a classic and got him to the PKs.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of goalkeeper, can we like call out the people that wanted to call out Teton for giving up four goals against the Crew when he was like helpless? Like, Teton has been really, really good the last two matches. He maybe has not been worked all that much except for the end of the Red Bulls match where he made really good saves.
But how hard is that, right? And how hard is that if you have not had to do too much during a match and then the last 15, 20 minutes you have to make three or four saves? That was outstanding. Yeah.
Well, I mean, goalkeepers have been open about it before. Like, they don't like it. They don't like just sitting there and then having to face three shots back to back to back and have to save them and make good saves, not just, you know, relatively easy ones. Like, Teton had to stretch out. He had to keep control of the ball, had to punch it away. I mean, he did everything a goalkeeper would have to do on pretty decently good shots on target. His distribution has been good. He's been very vocal in the back. He just looks in control. He looks like the goalkeeper that we had hoped he'd be last year, but of course the injuries and all that. And I love Spencer Ritchie. I just think Teton is the best current goalkeeper on this squad. Now, obviously me and Nate think Bobby Edwards is the future of the position, and seeing what I've seen of Bobby at his old, you know, stomping grounds, his old clubs, I think that's the truth. I think they are grooming Bobby to be the next really good domestic goalkeeper in the league. But for right now, Teton has kind of like underratedly been really, really good the last two matches. And that's after people wanted to blame him for all four goals against the Crew when it was literally just open season on the poor guy. I mean, I know the one-on-one with Zardes where he had his eyes closed. You know, maybe he could do better there. But, I mean, what do you want the guy to do? I mean, maybe against the best striker, you know, the U.S. has to offer in MLS. Okay. What do you want him to do that's any better than what he did? But, yeah, him combined with the back five has been really, really good. I'm kind of glad you mentioned goalkeeping there.
Do we see Portland do anything different coming in this match? Or do you think we see them just come in with their strong lineup and trying to do everything they've been doing the three group games?
I real quick, sorry to cut you off, man.
You're good.
I think they'd have to, because I think Atlanta and the Red Bulls didn't. And I think they kind of took for granted the fact that, and then maybe Atlanta not so much because they didn't know what was coming with the 5-3-2. They probably hadn't prepared for it much. The Red Bulls knew that FC Cincinnati was going to play a 5-3-2, that FC Cincinnati was going to be defensive, sit in their own third, just kind of defend and hit on the counter. And they did nothing to their starting 11. Didn't seem to me they did anything tactically to change from their previous two matches. For Portland's sake, I kind of hope they do, because like we talked about, individual moments of greatness within the 18. They're not huge at taking shots outside the 18. They're not the pretty passing amongst each other, through balls everywhere, perfectly weighted over the top balls like LAFC is. So that you'd almost think they'd have to make some kind of tactical change. The only thing that's a little bit different with them is just the amount of midfield quality they have already with Blanco, Valeri, the Chara brothers. They may not find it necessary, but I think FC Cincinnati right now, and I'm biased, obviously, I think we have a better chance of winning this match than we did the last two. Because I'm not convinced of Portland's back four. And I think that Portland's midfield sometimes gets a little too arrogant and they get too far up the pitch. And we've seen before when that happens, FC Cincinnati has been really good the last two matches at exploiting that, especially getting Joe Jow on the right wing and loads of space. So I would think that Portland's coming to this match knowing they have to make tactical changes. Nate, go ahead, bud.
Well, so I'll say this. Like, Savarese looks at us and he goes, can Stommerly make a change, right? From what we've seen in three Yopstam games, he played a 4-3-3, and it was a 4-0 loss. Embarrassment. We'll call a spade a spade. But then the next two games, he bunkered down, and to use that terminology again, but he had a plan, and he stuck to the plan, even with a man up versus Atlanta, and it worked. So Savarese comes into this most likely expecting Stom to do the same. And this is where it really becomes a chess match. Does Stom roll out the same tactics as we kind of expect him to do? Or does he just say, you know what, it's a knockout stage. We're not supposed to be here. Let's let bygones be bygones and let's just go get them, right? This team's got confidence. You get some hyped up in the locker room or whatever, the bubble or whatever it is in Orlando, and they roll out there like, we can absolutely take these guys. Let's switch tactics on them. But the defense has to absolutely be in position and understand their roles. To your point, Travis, Portland has a stout midfield, some of the best MLS experience we've seen in MLS. But we also know that the Char brothers, at least one of them, has a tendency to kind of get a little angry if somebody, or a little chippy if somebody's
and quickly,
and quickly. And guess what Frankie is shown to be very good at? So, you know, they didn't have Chara last year when we beat them 3-0. That was, you know, their record with and without him, the Diego Chara, not the Yimmy Chara, but the one that's been in the league for a while, the CDM, the eight, if you will, for Portland. He has a tendency to get a red, to get a quick yellow or something like that. And I think that's something that maybe Stom goes to Frankie, hey, man, you're playing the best you've played in your professional career, possibly in your lifelong career. Go after him. You know, balls in your court, to use that terminology, and go after them. We trust you. Go get them. And if that's the case, and Frankie, I think Frankie's got that skill set. Frankie wasn't the number one overall pick. People didn't see what they saw at UCLA. He's not now being talked with, the under-21 national team again. He's right back in that conversation. Great. For a while, last year he fell out. Like, he's like Frankie's like an alternate. Frankie is absolutely on that team right now because of what he's shown in two games. That's crazy, but that's how good he's been. And he showed a little bit of offensive brilliance versus Atlanta. So I think, honestly, it really goes back to Stom. And I think me being the homer and me being the slightly arrogant, overconfident type, like, I go for it, man. Like, the more I think about it, I go for it. And I hate to say it because I think it opens us up for mistakes, for a disappointment. But, like, again, coming into this tournament, if you had told us we would have got two wins, 6 points, which actually count toward the regular season – we all probably would have said, yeah, right. You know, we would have been ecstatic. I think, Travis, we predicted 4 points coming through this. So, a draw and a win. And we shut out Atlanta. We shut out the Red Bulls. Inadvertently, we got DeBoer fired. He quit. Like, inadvertently, because, I mean, it's not all on us. That was a long time coming to an extent. But losing to us didn't help that argument for him to stay in Atlanta. So,
and looking at how poor of a tactical manager he
absolutely
is.
Versus his center back pairing teammate in the Netherlands, right? Like, you got schooled by your teammate, by your quote unquote buddy, by your understudy. You got schooled by him. You really did. So I don't know, man. Like, I could see this going any which way, and it just gets me excited to watch this game tomorrow night because I don't know what to expect. It's the first time outside of Lacadia we really have and Vanderwerf, get well soon, buddy. But the first time we've really had almost a full squad in Orlando, outside of the first game, which, again, tactically we were very different. In confidence level, we were very different. So tomorrow night's exciting. Like, how do we come out? Who plays? What changes do we make? Does the Stom, who has shown the ability to make the right change at the right time, which, again, is a first for this club, does he do that? And all things point to yes. So I'll let you guys take it. I'll toss to you, Travis, and if you want to defer to Steven, cool, just so we don't interrupt one another. But I think that's why tomorrow night's so exciting. We have nothing to lose. absolutely nothing to lose. And what happens when you have nothing to lose? You go for it.
For sure. Steven, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, I think the keys to a result tomorrow night is that they come out and play defensively with the game in front of them. But as we've been talking about tonight, is that they are physical. This is a South American built team. Savarese is from Venezuela. He's got several Argentinians, Colombians, Venezuelans, a Costa Rican. It's a South American team. They hate to be challenged. They hate to be nicked by Frankie at their heels. You can talk to this, Travis. People were saying, Cincinnati beat Atlanta just because they were up a man for all that time. That was a tactical incurred result. And that's what can happen again tomorrow night is if they play a certain way, FC Cincinnati does, there is a chance that there are two yellows or a red card that Portland could incur. And then we're up a man again. That's part of the strategy. It's part of the tactical game plan that Stam is looking at. And then I would agree from a defensive perspective, Duval or Bonilla, whichever one that may start, as their left back, as their right back, and then Villafana on the right back, they can be beat. So we can actually get Jao and Gutman into a position that, a key to a result would be keeping it close, keeping the game in front of us, and then getting one of these hot wing backs up the flank, being able to penetrate and trying to, nick a goal. Travis, to you.
Nate, go ahead, buddy.
Well, I did the same, man. I wrote out three keys to victory. And the more we talk, this is funny. We do this often. And when we start talking through games, like, you guys kind of pull me in a different direction, which you're supposed to do. We all have different insights and thoughts, and we talk offline, but we don't. We kind of keep each other's thoughts until we get to this point for the purpose of talking through it. But I had three keys, and really a lot of them make perfect sense, right? Stay organized. Positioning is key from the back line, whether it's four, whether it's five. Positioning is key, and we absolutely have to clear the ball. We cannot give them second chances. They are clinical. There's too much experience on Portland's team to give them second chances. The other aspect of it is, honestly, control Valeri and Blanco. And Blanco and Valeri, as I said, like, you have to control those two guys. If you don't, those are their creators in the midfield. Obobese's not going to create. Nesgoda, however you want to say it, is really not a creator. He's a clinical finisher, but he's not going to create his own goal. It's not what he does. So, and the last is, we have to be clinical in counterattack. We've done that the past two games. We've done a really nice job of it. Credit to Kubo. Credit to even Reguton. We mentioned it before. Like, he outbodied a guy twice his size in the box and controlled the ball. Like, that's the moxie that Reguton brings to this team, whether it's off the bench or starting. So those are kind of my three keys. We basically have to defensively keep position, clear the ball, control the midfield to an extent. You're not going to shut down Valeri. You're not going to shut down Blanco. But if you can control them to an extent, you give yourself a chance. And then if we can be clinical, if we can get up 1-0, just like we did versus Atlanta, just more importantly, like we did versus the Red Bulls, like, it causes the other team to press. The one thing I'll say about Portland, they were down versus LAFC, which is, we'll be honest, a much better team than us. And they came back. They came back and tied it 2-2. Portland has scored two goals in each one of these games. 2-1 win, 2-1 win, 2-2 draw. So it all kind of coincides with what you guys have said. They're not really a creating team. They take slight moments of brilliance to take advantage of the goal. So, if I'm going to predict it, we kind of, to put a nail on, nail on the head, initially, I thought 1-0. Honestly, I'm going to go 2-1 us. And I genuinely picked us to beat Portland on my tournament bracket and on the MLS website and all that stuff. I honestly think we beat Portland. Whether it's 1-0, 2-1, I think we beat them. And then we kind of go from there. But I think, again, it goes back to the point. We have nothing to lose.
That's a fact. And looking at the rest of the bracket, I mean, if they get past Portland
–
NYCFC is not better than Portland. I mean, they looked really good yesterday, but I mean, they don't look as good as they did last year, obviously, but they're not better than Portland. I'm predicting a 2-0 win. I think we get a goal early. We bunker down. We really don't see the attacking pieces too much. And then we grab a goal late on, essentially, like almost like the Red Bulls match. like Steven alluded to, we saw it against Atlanta. South American players get frustrated very easily when they're in tight challenges, when they're constantly being kicked in the shin, or they feel a player on their heels, or someone's always in their arm or in their shoulder. And, you know, things like that will frustrate a South American-born player. Just it is what it is. It's just like, you know, European players have certain things that'll piss them off and frustrate them. So I think you'll see Chara pick up an early yellow. I think you'll see Portland off their game, not sure how to break down a back five, especially the back five that we have that has played really well the last two matches. I think Regatin finally gets on the score sheet early. And then I think, you know what, I think Vasquez gets a goal late. I think he finally stops pressing too hard. He grabs a goal late for his confidence, and I think we run out of there with the 2-0 win. And then, you know, the bracket, we are on the good side of the bracket, guys. We are not on the bad side. So we'd have the NYCFC up next, and that's a very winnable match. And from what I know, you may have LaCadia back for that one. LaCadia will probably be on the bench tomorrow. I don't know if they plan on using him. He hasn't really trained with the team a whole lot. He's done like rondos and stuff like that, which La Rosa's has really good rondos, but I digress. But mostly he's still running on the side, doing drills on the side. So I don't think he's definitely not going to start. He's not close to match fit, but if they need a goal late, they'll have LaCadia on the bench.
Yeah. Put him in the last 5 minutes.
It'd be nice to have him too. If they end up going to PKs, you have to bring him on late. If they end up going to PKs, to have him in your back pocket, it'll be really, really nice.
You know, I picture this, and I'll let you take the finishing prediction, Stephen. But imagine Frankie Fades in Chara's ear, making fun of his tightly wound dreadlocks. Like, bro, who did your hair? All game, pissing him off in Spanish, because Frankie can spit Spanish. And here comes the red, man. Here comes the red. Frankie ripping on Chara's hair the whole game. 60th minute gets him a red, and then we get the winning goal. So, little bit of a pipe dream, but Stephen, I'll let you finish it off, buddy.
It could be Titan, you know, cursing out Niezgoda in Polish. Who knows?
I mean, absolutely.
That'd be an interesting, confrontation there as well. I love your predictions, guys. I just this Portland team is so talented that I'm going to have to be the Debbie Downer, and we go down 1-0 or 2-1 in this match. We're just that shy of getting a result and moving on against Portland, but I think we lose by one tomorrow night.
I don't like you right now.
I didn't think you would, but hey, how good was David? How good was David last Thursday night? Was he phenomenal?
Yeah, David was awesome, man. He did a really nice job. For those that don't know, we went out to dinner last Thursday and got dinner together kind of for the first time. Kind of building this camaraderie as You Ain't Lying, as a brand, as a group, taking a different approach on things. And as we've mentioned in the past, not to get too far off to the side, but there's some good things coming. We're working on some things, hopefully a phone call tomorrow. So we'll keep things churning. But switching gears, guys, The Athletic, great subscription. If anybody isn't subscribing to The Athletic, I highly, highly recommend it. From the guests we've had on to the data that keeps coming out, there is the tentative plan in place to continue the season after this MLS's back tournament is done in Orlando. Obviously, there's some caveats to it. Obviously, this COVID thing, like Major League Baseball struggling 4 to 5 days into what they're trying to do. So there's some big caveats. But looking at it to kind of summarize, and then I'll let you guys kind of hit on what you expect to happen. But essentially about 2 weeks after the season ends, or the tournament ends in Orlando, I should say, there's basically a 6 games in roughly 8 weeks, 9 weeks time frame where teams are going to play to kind of get the season back up to speed. Plan being, teams will play regionally, with your Canadian teams actually all playing each other in Canada. They won't leave Canada because Canadian rules and Canadian kind of procedures right now kind of surpass or supplant what America's doing. So they'll play each other. You'll have Dallas and Nashville playing a 3-game set, which, credit to Dallas, that's a quick 9 points that they get an advantage on the rest of the league. I mean, what is that, 3-0, 2-0, 2-0, most likely? But good luck to Nashville there. But again, season comes back. The goal is to play basically 18 more games. You'll have a 23-game regular season with a regular single elimination playoff late November into December. So that's kind of the plan. I'd love it if it happens. That would give us 9 home games, most likely without fans, but not and 9 away games. There's certain teams that are looking into it. Like USL has some fans right now. I know it's getting some backlash in certain markets. DC United actually came out and did a poll to their fans. Would you attend games? So we all have said, like, we would love one more game in Nippert, right? One more send-off, one more final goodbye to Nippert for what it's been. I think if we don't do that this year, it's gone. I don't think the club's going to lose revenue to have, like, a farewell game to Nippert. It'd be cool if they did. But understanding the logistics of what Nippert brings and the money the team loses from concessions, from ticket sales, from having a game, basically renting a stadium, if West End is available next year, I don't think we come back to Nippert. But I'll let you guys kind of hit on that. Travis, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts? Do you like the concept of us doing a regular season with a regular playoff and then rolling into 2021, hopefully, quote-unquote, normal?
For sure. I don't know if they discussed, like, groupings. Like, necessarily, like, I feel like they should do, like, regional groups. Like, almost like they're doing with MLS's back tournament. Have maybe, like, groups of 6 where they play almost like a round-robin style group stage, and then they go from there. More soccer, I'm not going to turn down more soccer. I do not think for one second the fans should be in the stands this year. I don't think it's safe. Unless there's a vaccine and it's proven to work, I don't think we're going to see fans in the stands in any meaningful way in sports this year. And I think that's correct. I don't think it should be any other way. I love the idea. 9 home matches, 9 away matches. By the time the season, quote unquote, season starts, we should have 3 new players. And then we might be more competitive.
I like that. Good.
What happened?
Squirrel.
What? Squirrel. Yeah, so we should be much better off. I don't know about all that.
Better off. Yes, better off.
There you go. But yeah, I mean, I love the idea of 18 more matches. I would love to see Yopstam with a full bevy of talent for 18 more matches to see just how far away this club is. I think that's a good gauge for this club. If they can get 18 more matches with 3 more players after the transfer window, and then, you know, see where they're at by the end of the year. See maybe if they can bring some guys back that contracts are expiring. Maybe the needs on the club give Gerard a better idea. Because if they're done after the MLS's back tournament, do we really even know what we absolutely need still? I mean, what if Regatin is completely just amazing for the last 18 matches? Do you really need a right winger anymore? Or Stanko continues to get better, and then he becomes your true 6. Do you need a center defensive midfielder anymore? So it would be nice to get that, not only to see just soccer, but also to see the true needs of this team. I still think we need those positions, right wing, a 6, a right back, maybe more center back depth. But it'd be nice to for Yopstam and Gerard to see on the pitch for 18 more matches, okay, this is definitely what we need going into 2021.
Yeah, what I appreciate about Stam is he's looking at the tournament, and he saw those 3 games as they count towards the standings. He got that, and he pulled out the tactical bunny out of the hat and got the 2 wins like he did, which, by the way, in this new plan, 9 teams from the East and 9 teams from the West make the playoffs, and we're currently sitting in 8. So Stam has already put us into playoff contention right there. But he said this on the MLS Zoom call yesterday, that even when he's thinking about when to bring back Okadia, is he's got a thought in mind about those 18 additional games, and he knows they matter. And that's what I really do appreciate about his flexibility, or just how he thinks about things from game to game, is he understands results matter. He understands this is a tournament, and there's things that come with the tournament, bringing prize money or getting the CONCACAF, Champions League spot or whatever it may be, and he's going to go for that. But he also understands those next 18 games, he wants us to be a playoff contender. He wants us to get into the playoffs. We'll see how far we go. And as you're saying, Travis, then he can, with George, start to rebuild those roster spots. But I do agree. It's going to be interesting to see how they really accomplish those 18 games, especially when you start hearing the stuff that's coming out of Major League Baseball today and what may happen. The Canadian teams have already been booted from Orlando, so they'll play their own little round-robin tournament in Canada. And Nate, as you said, FC Dallas will you know, just tear up on Nashville a couple of games there. But it'll be interesting whether they keep it regional and have, like, you know, Chicago and, you know, Columbus and us, you know, in a little threesome, or where, how they're going to do it. But they're going to have to figure out how to get each team 18 more games.
I think by the end of this podcast, when it's all said and done, Nate is going to be barred from Nashville.
Like, yeah, I'm okay with that. Like, what am I going to miss? Six bachelorette parties, some decent music I can get on CMT, and a whole lot of COVID. Like, I'll pass, hard pass, time in and time out.
I will say this. How do you take nine teams into a playoff format? You got to figure that out. You're going to have to give a double bye the team that's first, and bye the teams that are second, third, and fourth, and I guess have three rounds. Is that what they're looking at?
Yeah, most likely. I think so what they did say is that these games, like, there's going to be East and West. You're not going to have East playing West once the regular, quote-unquote, regular season starts. So it's going to be regional. I'm going to try to keep things close or within respect to closeness as much as they can. So that probably means we've got one or two games versus Nashville, to your point, Travis. We'll play Columbus again. We're going to play Chicago, maybe Minnesota, if you look at it geographically. And some of the things like that. And then you also think like DC, York, Philly, like we're going to have some of those. I doubt we go to Florida just because of the kind of logistics of it. And we're not going to go probably past the Mississippi. But again, it's a one-off. It's a one-off season. To your point, Stephen, there's going to be probably at least one or two teams in each division, East and West. Nashville is staying in the East for this year. That may change. You know how MLS will MLS. We've said that 100 times. So who knows next year? But they're going to try to keep things as concise and quote unquote safe as possible. And I want to say these two things, and you guys can piggyback off them if you want. But even what Major League Baseball's done this past week, I absolutely have to give credit for as much flack as MLS took, as Garber took with this bubble initially. How well they've done with the lack of COVID test positives, getting Nashville, getting Dallas out of it, like just adjusting on the fly to make it work. And it absolutely has worked. Like I stayed up, I fell asleep and I woke up and I checked my phone last night at about like 12:30, 1 o'clock. And I'm like, holy crap, Vancouver's still tied 0-0. I turned that on, dude. I didn't fall asleep till 3 o'clock. I was exhausted at work today, but I stayed up and I watched a historical performance by a homegrown goalkeeper that I may never see again. And he lost in PKs, and that's partially on his team, missing shots. But, like, this tournament has been awesome. This tournament, like, tonight, as soon as we hang up and stop doing this, I'm turning on the game. And then you get LAFC and Seattle tonight, which, God bless, if I can stay up and watch that, I'm not going to be able to. But it's awesome to know that tomorrow night, guess what? I've got the Crew game to root against, and then I've got our game at 10:30. This tournament has been awesome, i.e. World Cup style. And even though there's no fans, I absolutely appreciate that every night of the week for the past 3 to 4 weeks or whatever it's been, there's been games on, and there's been something to look forward to, especially in the pandemic. There's been stuff to look forward to. So I don't know, guys, I'll let you kind of finish off, and then we'll get into our rants. But do you guys have any thoughts on the tournament, what the league's done, and anything of that nature?
Yeah, I'm thoroughly impressed, especially seeing what is happening in baseball. The NBA having issues with Lou Williams leaving to go to Magic City to get wings and other stuff. Like, I know that's something to joke about, but, you know, MLS has made it easy on players to feel safe. Whether or not all of them truly feel that, who knows? But, I mean, the numbers don't lie, right? What was the last 6 days they haven't reported a new positive test?
That's 2 weeks, I think it is.
Is it as long as 2 weeks? Yeah. You know, they get Dallas out of there. They get Nashville out of there. And now everything's fine. They fixed the group stage to where everything is equal. You know, the ratings may not be the best. Whatever. The ratings are never going to be amazing for MLS in America until they start open some things up and allow teams to really sign some stars. But they've done a really good job. I give MLS a lot of shit, Don Garber a lot of shit, because he's earned it. But they've done a really, really nice job, and I really don't have any complaints. I mean, Steven, you can take it from there. I mean, I know usually I have something to complain about, but I don't really have any complaints.
Yeah, and in fact, kind of dripping into our rants, mine wasn't going to be a rant tonight. It was going to be exactly this. I was at a family graduation party in Dayton on Saturday evening, and the Reds were on and about to lose the game. Their bullpen, stinking it up again Saturday evening. But lo and behold, everyone goes into the room to watch Orlando play Montreal. We're talking about like Ohio State football fans who would never want to watch a soccer match that are sitting next to me asking me questions about soccer.
Yeah,
that's what this tournament has been. It's been refreshing. Yes, they've been able to keep the COVID test negative, thankfully. But there were a lot of doubters, too many doubters. And a lot of those doubters have gone quiet all of a sudden. So I guess that's a mini rant, is where are all those guys that were canceled the MLS's back tournament, making fun of the MLS's back tournament? Well, guess what? It's been a success. I mean, I'm up in Dayton with a bunch of college football fans and Reds fans, and they're sitting down watching Orlando versus Montreal. It's been a success.
Cancel it.
Yeah, cancel it. Cancel it.
All right, so kind of I'm going to end this right now. I'm going to go into rants. That's because you just mentioned something that I've been going through, and I just got to get off my chest. So without further ado, COVID-19 tests, they're fucking awful. If anybody's got one, you know they're extremely uncomfortable. I don't know if the painful is the right word, but they are extremely uncomfortable. Me and my wife got one last Wednesday as we went on vacation. Our employers did not want us back until we've gotten those. Now, we are on Monday. It has been nearly a week. My wife got a phone call today that she got her results and she is negative. Now, here's the funny thing. I have not. I was in the same car as she was. We went through a drive-through testing facility. We were tested by the same person in the same car in the same drive-through facility at the same time. How do I not have my results yet? So, to the bigger picture, how are we supposed to make this better in this country if we are waiting a week to get results back? What if I had been positive this whole time and I'm spreading it to people, especially my family and my own home? Even if my wife's negative, I could be positive. How are we supposed to flatten the curve? How are we supposed to get fans in the stands? I know that doesn't seem like it's important, but it's just something on my mind. How are we supposed to get fans in the stands? How are we supposed to go back to normal? How are we supposed to live somewhat normal lives and beat this thing if we can't even get tests back done in the same vehicle at the same time and can't get them back within a week? It's beyond ridiculous. I thought that the U.S. was better than this. Maybe not with medical care. Maybe I'm just naive. Maybe I don't know about the rest of the world and what they offer medical care. But I thought we were supposed to be better than this. We're supposed to be, quote unquote, the greatest country in the world, but it takes me more than almost a week to get a COVID-19 test back. And my wife's already got her results and we were in the same vehicle. And that's pretty much everything I got to say about that.
Well, you're not wrong to get that in at least once a podcast.
All right.
Yeah, take the opportunity where it presents itself. But my rant isn't a rant. And we talked a little bit about this offline, guys. And the world right now is unique. I've said this 100 times. And switching gears a little bit, competition, right? Competition, whether it's MLS is back, whether it's baseball, whether it's everyday life, whether it's a hobby, whether it's, something you do in your free time, whether it's you're at the gym and the dude in front of you that is on the bench press put up this and you got to put up 10 pounds more, man, leave the weight on. I got it. Kind of that male stigma, if you will. We all have it to our own extent. But competition does one of two things. It either brings out the best or it shows your true colors. And if it brings out the best, you look, go, man, damn, that's good. I gotta one up that. I gotta earn mine. I gotta get that much better. However you do it, that's on you, man. That's what you gotta figure out. That's the world we live in. That's the reality that we live in. Whether it's work, whether it's fun, whether it's sports, there's always gonna be competition. The other side of it is when you're faced with competition and you go, this is tough. I'm gonna do it differently, or I'm gonna use an advantage that maybe not somebody else has, or whatever it may be. You're going to kind of take advantage of the situation or cry wolf in some circumstances. So that's really the reality, and kind of looking at it and challenging each one of us, whether it's us three trying to get better at doing this and continuing to learn, whether it's the team tomorrow night versus a team that they shouldn't beat on paper that we've beaten before, or in a position that we shouldn't be in, but we're here. So I said it last week, shooters shoot, and I'm going to continue to shoot, and I'm continuing to push the envelope just like you guys are. And we'll hopefully get some good news tomorrow and keep pushing forward. So Travis, I'll let you close us out. You open us up tonight. I'll think of a theme song for us. Hopefully it'll be something entertaining. And we'll go from there, buddy. But close us out.
You completely forgot about Steven.
Steven can pick a song if he wants. He already did his rant. He just did his rant.
It probably would be Da 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 by The Trio. I have to look that one up.
Did I completely miss Steven's rant?
You did. It wasn't a rant.
Kids these days. See, guys, we're learning as we go.
What the hell was the rant? There was no rant.
It's well, Steven. It's not like he's going to... If Steven goes off on a tangent at this point, something's up.
Yeah, we got to work on Steven.
It was the mini rant about the cancel the tournament. It was my mini rant. Where those guys go?
Well, I didn't know that was a rant. You're just Steven. So we're still learning Steven a little bit, and maybe I need to learn some more. But you're so even keel. I'm not. I'm an angry little fella. Like,
I was gonna say this, and so this is goes along with your rant, Travis. Is no matter what comes back with your COVID test, you will always be R positive.
Oh. Isn't that adorable?
Kids these days.
All right, guys. Well, since I've maybe made an ass out of myself, which I don't, you know what? I don't even care.
It was coming, whether it was now or later. It was coming. Get out of the system.
It's totally fine. Anyway, guys, again, it's not lost on us that you guys listen to us weekly. It's pretty cool shit. We really, really appreciate it. Any critiques, any questions, please DM me, Nate or Steven. With that said, you guys stay safe and everybody have a good night.
Prost.
Cats by 90. FC 2-1. FCC. Damn it, I did it.
Oh my God. Oh, Jesus.
I'll say
hold on. Nope, we're not going anywhere yet.
shit. My rant is when people say FC.
Good night, guys. I'm out.
I forgot that Steven went on a rant, but you committed the cardinal sin.
Did I tried to cut it off too soon? Somebody's gonna hang this. If like you were a phone call, you'd hang up right now, but you can't.
God, Jesus. Okay, guys, prost.
Prost. Prost. Prost. Forgive me.
I'm just setting him up, Harry.
There's the white flag. One lap to go.
Last lap, Cole.
Don't keep this up, Cole, please.
Harry, this guy's going down.
Last turn, careful.
He's going to try and sling out past you, Russ.
Don't worry.
I know Cole. He always goes to the outside.
This one's for you, Harry.
He's going high. He's going low. Son of a bitch.
Here come the cars to the finish line. It's Cole Trimble taking the win.
Go, Russ.